Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Fact Hunter Radio Network.
Welcome back, Fact Hunters and Truth Seekers from around the world. It's time for another edition of the Fact Hunters podcast. Today, it's episode 149, Operation Cloverleaf. Much to talk about. Let's get right into it. First and foremost, I want to thank everyone for all the positive feedback on the Dustin Nemos episode. The emails have been coming in droves. Some people have said they've listened to it multiple times. And I think I may have mentioned this already, but Dustin has agreed to come back again and visit us in the future. You know, we'll keep it to a couple particular subjects and really, really dive deep down into it. I'm looking at April, possibly on our special on the 19th, if he's free that day. But stay tuned to that. Again, thanks to Dustin. It was really, I felt like one of my better podcasts that I've ever done. And he was very thoughtful, and obviously spends a lot of time in his research. So kudos, tip of the hat to him. And again, thank you for all your emails. This week, another busy week. Again, tonight, episode 149, Operation Cloverleaf. Tomorrow night, I will be interviewing Bart Sabrell. Will be rejoining the podcast. He was with us in the fall. He emailed us a few weeks ago, said that a couple folks that were involved with the Apollo missions had recently passed. So he has more information since they have passed. I guess he couldn't say certain things while they were alive. So he has new information to share with us. And it'll be a very interesting conversation. We have him for exactly 1 hour tomorrow night. We'll record the podcast and we'll get it out sometime very late Wednesday evening, very early Thursday. And we have another live show this week. That's right, Thursday, February 23rd, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Please go to thefacthunter.com. Join us in the chat room. Listen to us on the Fact Hunter Radio. We'll be going live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be taking your phone calls after the first hour. William, we gave him the moniker the Jesuit Hunter. He's dedicated his life to exposing the Jesuit agenda. He works very hard at what he does. He puts out two or three videos a week on brand new tube. He's one of the most, when we talk about feedback as far as episodes, anytime I have William on, I get emails on both sides of the aisle. And this is your opportunity. I've had so many people saying, hey, next time you have him on the show, can we make it a call-in show so we can ask him questions? So again, Thursday night, 8 p.m., it'll be a live program. For the first hour, we'll be talking updates, what's going on with him, his research. We'll talk some current events. And then around 9 o'clock or so, we'll open up the phone lines, and you guys can actually chat with William Boot. Should be a great program. And then Friday, probably talk a little bit. It'll be a brief podcast. Maybe I'll back it up on the other side with some a classic audio clip. But I want to talk a little bit on Friday about Ted Kaczynski. And if you don't recall, a lot of people just say, you know, Ted Kaczynski was a guy who sent bombs through the mail. Well, Ted launched, it was a coordinated bombing campaign, and it was all in an attempt to raise awareness about the threat that digital technology poses. And here we are in 2023, and, you know, not that anybody condones the bombings, but you see exactly, you know, how this technocracy is taking over our world and how it can affect our lives being deplatformed. We see everything that's happened over the last 3 years. And I'll tell you, he was all over the industrial society and its future and how dangerous it could be. It's a really great article that was written last year by Derek Bowes. I want to share with you guys, and then maybe on the backside we'll throw some classic audio. Saturday's an off day, and then Sunday night, as always, we'll have classic audio for you as well. So much to talk about. Let's start with the big story, which just a couple weeks ago, when Biden and friends came out and said, yeah, we're going to give them tanks, but we'll never give them jets and long-range missiles. And I came on the program that day, and I said, I guarantee you that by March 31st, they will have agreed to send them jets. I'm not saying they would have given them jets by that time. Certainly, I'm still on board for June when they will physically receive them, unless things go sideways quickly. And then here we go this afternoon, 2 o'clock. I get a little message in my news alert from Reuters. U.S. lawmaker in Kiev, momentum shifting towards giving Kiev long-range missiles, and yes, that's right, F-16s for Ukraine. A senior U.S. lawmaker said that during a visit to the Ukrainian capital on Tuesday, that momentum in Washington was shifting towards sending the long-range missiles and fighter jets coveted by Kiev as it battles Russia's invasion. Michael McCaul, the Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said the Biden administration and National Security Council were still split over, quote, how fast and what weapons to send to Ukraine, which, again, Ukraine wants everything. It's only a matter of time before they want our soldiers. And, it's bizarro world, as I say every week, guys. We are living in friggin' bizarro world. So, you know, I said 3 weeks ago, by March 31st, we will have agreed. And here we are with still 5 weeks to go before the deadline. The self-imposed deadline, and they're already saying, yeah, it looks like we're going to give it to it. They're just working out the details at this point, how many, et cetera. But certainly, I think that March 31st deadline I gave myself was plenty of time, because it's now looking probably by mid-March at the very latest, they will formally announce that we're giving them more of our war stock, which is very concerning, because we've heard from several people that said if we were to get into an actual force-on-force war with China, that we only had about enough stock for 1 week, which is very worrisome. We're just giving our war chest away. Of course, it's another reason for the military-industrial complex to keep grinding away. However, if China comes and defeats our military, then it doesn't matter, does it? A lot of things going on. Can't worry too much, right? You can't just live in fear 24/7, but at the same time, you have to keep an eye. I always say you got to keep that middle of the road, eyes in the back of your head, kind of prepare. It's good to have and not need, then to need and not have, etc. But things are very worrisome. You know, here's the president of the United States on President's Day, in Ukraine, saying here's another $500 million and some missiles and da-da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, the people in Ohio are still struggling, and it wasn't until Trump, again, credit where credit's due, when he said he was going to show up tomorrow, was until then when FEMA decided they were going to show up. So whether tomorrow is a real event or a distraction from something else, I guess that remains to be seen. Something else I wanted to share with you before we start getting into Operation Cloverleaf, and it all kind of ties together, whether it be chemtrails, EMPs. These are the things that are most worrisome right now here in Delaware, where normally this time of year you were in the 40s during the day and maybe the 50s, a couple days in the 50s, and certainly very cold at night, cold mornings, you know, starting your car, letting it run, scratching the ice off your windshield in the mornings before you go to work. We haven't had that in a while. Today was in the 60s. And the worrisome thing here is our trees, like our peach tree, our pear tree, they're starting to bud already, right? And you know, in March, we're going to get a big freeze. So I'm worried that these trees that are starting to... If a tree blooms too early, it can be very stressful for the trees, especially, again, when it's mild one day like we've seen for, it seems like, a couple weeks now. By the way, this Thursday, in 2 days, it's supposed to be 78 degrees here. February the 23rd is going to be 78 degrees. So, and again, it's still February in the Mid-Atlantic region. But, you know, it's worrisome when this happens. You know, the new growth on the trees is really shocked by the sudden freeze. It can damage. It can make for an awful year for crops. So, again, I think that's why I'm choosing, with everything going on, talk a little bit about Operation Cloverleaf. You know, the chemtrails, the aerosol, the EMPs, electromagnetic weapons, on and on and on. One last thing I want to talk about before we jump into the podcast. And our friend William Boot, who's going to be on Thursday night, is actually the one who sent me this article. There's two Supreme Court cases this week that could change the internet forever. Now, it's only oral agreements this week. It's expected the rulings to come in June. So you still have another 2 or 3 months before I believe they're really going to make some serious changes to the internet. But again, the Supreme Court is set to hear back-to-back oral arguments this week in two cases that could significantly reshape online speech and content moderation. The outcome of the oral argument scheduled for today and tomorrow could determine whether tech platforms and social media companies can be sued for recommending content to their users for supporting acts of international terrorism. It goes on and on. However, there's a caveat to all this. And if you really dig deep into the article, you will see that the Biden administration has already weighed in on the case. It talks about arguing that Section 230 protects big tech for et cetera, but the government brief argued that those protections do not extend to algorithms because they represent the company's own speech, not that of others. But the biggest thing that comes out of this article is, again, the right and the left narrative. On the right, Republican officials allege that Section 230 gives social media platforms a license to censor conservative viewpoints. However, and this is the big takeaway from this, the Democrats, including the guy with executive power, even though he's not the one who writes it, he just signs his name. We know he's a puppet. But they, Biden, Obama, the people who control the narrative, and the folks above them, obviously, but they have argued that Section 230 prevents tech giants from being held accountable for spreading misinformation and hate speech. So again, we could see a certain ruling in June, and then the Biden administration could bring back to life that whole, remember, the Truth Committee or whatever it was, and you could see a real change in the internet forever. And of course, that in line could bring about the social credit scores, which again goes back to Ted Kaczynski. He was saying all these things way back in the day. He certainly called it. Obviously, we don't condone sending bombs through the mail, but he knew the dangers of technocracy and what's going on today. Very well this summer, you could see a certain ruling, federal government step in, and they're going to say, we will determine what is truth and what is not. And if you don't go along with the official narrative, well, then you can kiss your podcast goodbye, you can kiss your websites goodbye, and you're going to be booted from social media. Before you laugh, just look at everything that's happened over the past 3 years. They are really balls to the wall with the New World Order, and they don't plan on stopping it. It's up to us to stop it. So keep your eye on that. Again, the arguments are today and tomorrow. Look for rulings in June, and that's something we will keep an eye on for the, you know, the near future. All right, let's get to today's podcast.
Bye.
So as we kind of edge our way into Operation Clover with Cloverleaf, they always tell us ahead of time what they are going to do, right? And one of the biggest mouthpieces for the evil agenda for Team NWO is Klaus Schwab. And he said this on July 8th, 2020.
We all know, but still pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. To use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity to reflect on the lessons the cybersecurity community can draw and improve our preparedness for a potential cyber pandemic.
Cyber, that's the next pandemic, a cyber pandemic. And there's many ways they can take out our power grids. And one of them is an EMP. And this is more of an FYI. And I'm going to put this in the show description because I enjoy watching this guy on YouTube. So if you want to subscribe to him and check out some of these amazing things that he talks about, you're more than welcome to. Again, this will be in the show description.
Today, I'm going to show you the 7 things you must do immediately after an EMP strike. Each one is important, and I think it will totally take you by surprise. The first thing you need to do is determine if it's a normal blackout or something deadly like an EMP. So every time the power goes out, check your mobile phone. If it's dead, you're probably dealing with an EMP. To make sure, check a few other electronic devices you may have in your home that are not plugged in, and should still work in a blackout. Or see if you can get your car to start. The second thing you must do is secure what water you still can from the system. After the pumps stop, there will still be some water left in the pipes, which you can secure if you move fast enough. The next thing you need to do is spend any cash you have. Cards and any form of electronic payment will be gone, but cash will still hold its value, at least for a time. So use it to get the things that you need to survive, like long-lasting foods, medicines, or a solar-powered generator. Once you get home, I would suggest removing all the perishable foods you have in the fridge and the freezers and cook them. That should keep them good for a few days longer, preventing you from letting vital calories simply go to waste. Next, consider how you're going to deal with all your trash and human waste. With toilets that won't work anymore and no garbage truck coming around, these can become a breeding ground for germs and attract rodents. Building a backyard incinerator is a simple solution. Just make sure as far away as not to contaminate your food and water reserves. Another very important step that you must take is to secure your property. The sooner, the better. When the food runs out, people will swarm like locusts looking for it elsewhere. If they find you unprepared, they'll take you for everything you have. Place booby traps, buried spikes, secure doors and windows, and try to make your home as unappealing a target as possible. Make sure there's no food smells leaking out of your home. It doesn't take much to deter looters for a while. Simply be a less desirable or more dangerous target than your next door neighbors. This way, your turn will come a little later, giving you more time to prepare and better secure your property. Speaking of your neighbors, you can work with them to set up a security plan for your whole area. Never let them know what you have in terms of supplies, but explain the rationality that will happen following a collapse in modern society, and what you will all need to do in order to survive the hungry mobs moving your way. Doing these simple things will put you in a much better position than most of the people out there following the strike. But this is just the beginning of the beginning. According to the EMP Commission established by our own government, putting the grid back together will take 2 years if all the other countries would build the huge transformers the EMPs burn out. By that time, without trucks to supply our stores and pharmacies, without hospitals and general chaos reigning, they estimate that 9 in 10 people will die. Surviving long-term without the grid, cars, refrigeration, phones, running water, and other things we take for granted takes a lot more than a few simple steps I've mentioned so far. Click on the link below to discover over 70 ingenious do-it-yourself projects that can help you survive in a world without electricity and become self-sufficient on your own property. like the 3-barrel rainwater harvesting system that automatically filters it, a stovepipe heater that gives you free hot water at the faucet, and the off-grid shower that you can connect it to, the smokeless smokehouse to preserve meat and cheese without drawing any unwanted attention, how to turn a CB radio into a powerful transmitter, a hydro-powered backup generator, and a wind turbine made from salvaged motors. Off-grid air conditioning, a simple device to harvest water out of thin air, the lazy man's hand pump for tapping underground water reserves on your own property, the high-yield raised beds that you can finish in under an hour, an inexpensive solar panel setup that you can power a regular fridge or freezer, a TV and laptop 24/7, all at the same time, as well as a battery bank to store any surplus electricity for your other appliances. The perpetual backyard aquaponic system that can provide fresh food even on the darkest of days. A cool stone oven for cooking outside. Backyard alarms and concealed traps against intruders. The zero water waste toilet. The off-grid refrigerator. The hidden food growing fence. And many, many other no-grid survival projects that you need around your house and won't find anywhere else.
And there you go. And again, that'll be in the show description if you're interested. You know, again, this isn't to fearmonger at all. It's just to put in place the seriousness of what could happen with this type of attack. If you heard them, it could take up to 2 years to rebuild the grid. That doesn't mean it's going to take 2 years, you know, in your neck of the woods. But what I'm telling you is if you depend 100% on the grocery store and an EMP happens to take out your neck of the woods, you know, you're going to be struggling. And I don't want to see that to happen to anybody. And while many people have, you know, gotten dehydrated foods from, you know, there's all kinds of prepper websites and even some of the truthers out there. I know Alex Jones, he sells the Patriot, you know, food supply or whatever. But you have to think long term. You have to think more than just a couple of weeks. We worried about everything. You know, everybody around us knows that we have chickens. So in the fall, we bought an 18-foot bell tent with a heater and some cots because if something like this type of event, God forbid, does happen, I'm not going to be able to come in at night and go to sleep every night. I'm going to have to be out there guarding my chickens because that is a never, you know, that is a food supply for 5 years for us. You know, my chickens are young and they're going to be laying eggs for the next 5 years. People, looters, etc., are going to be looking for that type of thing to steal. So you can't just say I have this because there's going to be people that are going to want to take it. So I wanted to make you aware of that. That'll be in the show description as well as two items that I personally have that I think will benefit you if you're interested. The emergency weather radio with a solar and hand crank to charge certain items, as well as a Baofeng ham radio, which you don't need a license to listen. Technically, you need one to broadcast, but if the SHTF happens, nobody's going to care, and you're going to want a way to communicate with others, because if you can't, if the cell phones don't work, and obviously the internet will be down. If you need emergencies, you'll be able to communicate with this radio, and they're very, very affordable. So I think that's all I had to cover. Let's get into Operation Cloverleaf, the most dangerous weapons testing program in history, written by Amy Worthington from August 29th, 2015. North America is now suffering its seventh year of conspicuous and dangerous aerosol and electromagnetic operations conducted by the U.S. government under the guise of national security. And again, this is the Millennium Report. We'll have this in the show description as well. Concerned citizens watch in fear as military tankers discolor the skies with toxic chemicals that morph into synthetic clouds. And, you know, we've seen this more and more and more. I've posted pictures of this on Instagram. It happens, you know, we have Dover Air Force Base just a couple miles away from us. We continually witness bizarre meteorological occurrences as powerful electromagnetic devices manipulate both the jet stream and individual storm fronts to create artificial weather and climatic conditions. Black operations projects embedded within these aerosol missions are documented to sicken and disorient select populations with biological test agents and psychotronic mind and mood control technologies. Now, part of what is happening in the atmosphere above us involves the Pentagon's secret space weapons program, designed for strategic, operational, and tactical levels of war. NASA missions will soon be transferred to Pentagon control. The Air Force Space Command declares that in order to monitor and shape world events, it must fight intense, divisive wars with great precision. Air Force Secretary James Roche stated that capabilities are integrated with and affect every link in the kill chain. A glimpse into the new death technologies under construction is in legislation introduced by Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich. His unsuccessful Space Preservation Act of 2001 was intended to ban space deployment of on this includes high altitude, right? Not necessarily outer space, but high altitude. Electronic, psychotronic, and information weaponry, high altitude, ultra low frequency weapons, plasma, laser weapons, strategic and theater and tactical weapons, the big one, chemical, biological, and environmental weapons. And of course, the big one, chemtrails. He actually put chemtrails in the bill, but that item was eventually stricken later version because he caught flack from his other legislators saying, come on, that chemtrails are a conspiracy theory. So just to try to get it through, he pulled chemtrails from one of the later versions, but it still died. In their quest to remain top dog in the kill chain, the purveyors of perpetual war have deliberately dimmed Earth's life-giving sunlight. They've been spraying it for years. Bill Gates is behind much of this evil. Reduced atmospheric visibility with lung-clogging particles and polymers. This ecological terrorism has severely compromised public health, according to thousands of testimonials. Maybe COVID was an airborne thing. Who knows? Years of mass appeals to legislators, media, and military officials for information and for cessation of catastrophic atmospheric degradation have fallen on deaf bureaucratic ears. Public awareness of what befalls us remains as murky as our skies because those in the know are muzzled by national secrecy laws, and Americans have no authority to challenge matters of national security. And again, to what extent do the people in charge have control of the weather and even greater things? When that earthquake happened in Turkey, there were a lot of stories saying that it was intentional, it was a weapon. So we don't know to what level of weapons they have as far as altering the weather and things like earthquakes. At least part of the aerosol project has been dubbed Operation Cloverleaf, probably due to its multifaceted operations, which include weather modification, military communications, ozone and global warming research, biological weaponry, and detection testing. Dumping tons of particulate matter from aircraft has geoengineered our planetary atmosphere into a highly charged, electrically conductive plasma that is useful for military projects. The air we breathe is laden with asbestos-sized synthetic fibers and toxic metals, including barium salts, aluminum, and reportedly radioactive thorium. These materials act as electrolytes to enhance conductivity of military radar and radio waves. Poisonous, on par with the arsenic and a proven suppressant of the human immune system. Only a small percentage of the military's atmospheric modification projects are visibly obvious. What we can't see is equally dangerous. The ionosphere The Earth and its inhabitants are continually bombarded with high frequency microwaves that are used to manipulate the charged atmosphere for weather modification and information gathering. And of course, here it is, the tectonic earthquake producing weaponry. Independent chemtrail researcher Clifford Carnicum confirms that we are also continuously subjected to extremely low electromagnetic frequencies, pulsing at 4 hertz multiples, frequencies known to profoundly affect human biological and mental functioning. Getting back to that tectonic weaponry, people were all over the place saying, because, you know, the whole thing with Ukraine and NATO and Turkey standing in the way, that was their revenge, doing the earthquake there. Do they have that where they can create massive earthquakes? Never say never, but that would certainly, that's scary if they have that type of control. There's a well-documented biological component to continuously ongoing atmospheric studies in which nations and regions are fervently inoculated with specially designed delivery systems with combinations of viruses, bacteria, fungi, mycoplasma, and even exotic biological markers so that test masters can assess human, animal, and plant response. Gross chemical and electromagnetic pollution is only part of the horrific realities we endure. The sociopaths who brazenly pervert the skies, our climate, and weather for power and profit are the same madmen who have waged 4 limited nuclear wars since 1991. Radioactive weaponry, declared both illegal and immoral by the entire civilized world, has been used by the Pentagon in Desert Storm, the Balkans, in Afghanistan, and Iraq. And again, if you don't want to sleep for a couple weeks, just go Google the babies of Fallujah. And good luck sleeping. I don't really recommend you looking that up if you can't handle pictures that are horrible. I should probably even stop saying that. Few Americans understand the extent of carnage inflicted in their name across the planet. And I always get crossed with that type of thing. Ignoring it doesn't solve a problem. But however, it's just to think that mankind can, push these evils on other human beings and affect generations is heartbreaking. By scientific definition, the missiles, tank penetrators, and bunker-busting bombs unleashed against Iraq and Afghanistan by the U.S. and British forces in the so-called War on Terror, and again, anytime you can declare war on something that is an inanimate object, you can go after it as long as you want. The war on drugs, the war on terrorists, people made a lot of money off those wars. Refuse from radioactive weaponry does not disperse, just like the uranium rounds, but remains in the atmospheric organ toxic that is carcinogenic to all living flesh for a long. It's carcinogenic for generations upon generations. Now, inhabitants of the Pentagon's 2 newly liberated nations, now that they're liberated, they are slowly dying of radiation and heavy metal poisoning. Victims of U.S. weaponry used in Afghanistan have a concentration of non-depleted uranium isotopes in their bodies never seen before in civilian populations. Tons of depleted and non-depleted uranium contaminating their land, their air, food, and water guarantee their painful demise. Using data from the United Kingdom Atomic Energy Authority, nuclear scientist Loren Morit calculates that the estimated 2,500 plus tons of depleted uranium used against Iraq in both 1991 and 2003 is sufficient to causing 25 million new cancers, When I was in Afghanistan, or not Afghanistan, Iraq, the population of Iraq was 25 million. So you do the math. Is it a coincidence? Here it is in the next sentence. Is it a coincidence that the population of Iraq, according to our good friends at the CIA, shout out to the guys on the white van down the street. Hope you are doing well. Hope we are entertaining you tonight. The population of Iraq is indeed 25 million. There you go. The quarter million U.S. and British fighting forces who have helped the Pentagon deliver this Holocaust also face inevitable radiological death by slow burn. Rotated into atomic war zones since 2001, coalition troops have inhaled and ingested millions of tiny, invisible ceramic uranium particles, which emit alpha, beta, and gamma radiation as they embed in kidneys, lungs, blood, lymph, and bone. Radiation exposure to a single internalized U-238 alpha particle is 50 times the allowable whole body dose for 1 year under international standards. As U-238 decays into daughter isotopes, it becomes even more radioactive, causing cell and organ destruction to escalate over time. Uranium contamination leads to incapacitating multi-organ system disorders identical to illnesses that has been suffered by thousands of Gulf War vets. Bodily fluids poisoned with uranium isotopes sicken spouses and visit upon offspring a genetic Armageddon. And we did a video on that a couple of years ago, and it's heartbreaking. Who knows what a disabled and prematurely dying military population will mean to future stability and the safety of the United States. Yet Senator Chuck Hagel, Representative Nebraska, or Republican Nebraska, excuse me, now demands that America provide more fodder for its atomic battlefields by reinstating the military draft so that all of our citizens bear some responsibility and pay some price in order to understand the intensity of the challenge we face. And again, I still stick to my guns. Going back to the beginning of this podcast, we are going to see a draft in the very near future. Despite disingenuous denials that biological harm will result from atomic warfare, the Pentagon knows full well the gruesome realities of uranium weaponry by virtue of its own voluminous studies spanning 60 years. Pentagon documents confirm that America's war establishment knowingly exposes its own troops to dangerous levels of radiations. Yes, they do. The resulting illnesses of those now returning from the war zones is already making headlines. Because of our military-industrial overlords brazenly poisoning the very grunts who make their war games possible, we must logically conclude that there is virtually nothing that they would not secretly and sadistically do to the rest of us. Military officials lie about chemtrails as they do about the effects of the DU weaponry, right? The depleted uranium weaponry. If people were to consider the published science regarding chemtrails and depleted uranium, they would understand that we are all in mortal jeopardy. Both the Pentagon's aerosol operations and its limited nuclear wars are deeply interconnected. We can trace the beginnings of Operation Cloverleaf right to the strangelove brain of Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb and proponent of nuking inhabited coastlines to rearrange them for economic projects. Before he died, coincidentally, in 2003, when Iraq War Part II kicked off, Teller was the director emeritus of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where plans for nuclear, biological, and directed energy weapons are crafted. In 1997, Teller publicly outlined his proposal to use aircraft to scatter in the stratosphere millions of tons of electrically conductive metal materials, ostensibly to reduce global warming. Shortly after Teller's presentation, the public began seeing frenetic chemtrails. All the way back in 2000, 23 years ago, CBS News admitted that scientists were looking at drastic solutions for global warming, including manipulate the atmosphere on a massive scale. Again, playing God. And there's something much more nefarious than protecting us from global warming. CBS confirmed that the plan to load the air with tiny particles would, quote, deflect enough sunlight to trigger global cooling. Again, this is them saying, you know, God screwed up. He didn't make everything right. We're going to fix it. And what they're really doing is they're poisoning us. And you can see here we are outside. We're seeing our trees starting to grow and the bugs starting to come back here in February when they shouldn't be back for at least another month because of their spraying, because of them playing God. Teller estimated that commercial aircraft could be used to spew these particles at a cost of, you guys ready for this? 33 cents a pound. This gives credence to a report by an airline manager forced by a compulsory non-disclosure agreement, NDA, to remain anonymous. You see that? This gives credence to a report by an airline manager forced by a non-disclosure agreement to remain anonymous that commercial aircraft have been co-opted to assist the military in consummating Project Cloverleaf. A 1991 Hughes aircraft patent confirms that sunscreen particulate can run through jet engines. A science textbook now used in some public schools discusses the sunscreen project by showing a large orangish-red jet with the caption, quote, jet engines running on richer fuel could add particles to the atmosphere to create a sunscreen. The logo on the plane says particle air. The implications of this crucial information should not be understated. A program to make America millions of annual jet flights a source of specially designed particulate pollution is serious business. Cloverleaf particles and polymers saturating the air we breathe are smaller than 10 microns, smaller than 10 parts per million, and are invisible to the human eye. By comparison, a human hair is about 60 to 100 microns in thickness. Scientists and the EPA report that because PM10 and submicron pollution particles bypass the lung filters and go directly to the bloodstream, they can cause radical changes in the endocrine and nervous systems. They can also trigger high blood pressure, and they can cause heart attacks within 2 hours of inhalation. They cause the blood to become sticky, making it tougher for the heart to pump and increasing the risk of blood clots and vessel damage. Now, researchers in Taiwan document a significant increase in the number of stroke victims when the PM2 pollutant levels rise above the average levels. The American Lung Association confirms that we are breathing more toxic air than ever. No wonder nationwide asthma rates have been soaring in recent years. Tiny synthetic filaments called polymers are part of the brew. In 1990, a NATO report detailed how flying aircraft can modify the atmosphere by spraying polymers to absorb electromagnetic radiation. U.S. patent number 6315213 describes how cross-linked aqueous polymers dispersed into a storm can diminish the rain. And going way back, you know, with our Operation Popeye podcast, you guys know that they can create rain as well. Not always from scratch. There's got to be some participation in the air. But, Operation Popeye was used to flood the trade routes in Vietnam. Polymer chemist Dr. Michael Castle has studied atmospheric polymers for years. He has found that some of them contain bioactive materials, which can cause serious skin lesions and diseases when absorbed into the skin. He has identified microscopic polymers comprised of genetically engineered fungal forms that mutate with viruses. He says that trillions of funguses and viruses and mutated spores, which secrete a powerful mycotoxin, are indeed now part of the air we breathe. Allergies. Allergies over the last 20 years have really, 30 years, gone through the roof, right? Allergies are big business, by the way. Big business. Big Pharma has entered the podcast. We can safely bet that into our particle-enriched air, experimenters are also dumping nanoparticles developed for a variety of military and industrial uses. These engineered carbon molecules, as small as 1,000th the diameter of a human hair, 1,000th the diameter of a human hair, can display bizarre chemical properties, and they are known to trigger organ damage. A recent study at SMU, Southern Methodist University in Texas, found that fish that are exposed to one type of nanoparticle suffered severe brain damage after only 48 hours. The military's aerosol operations have been climate-altering to the extreme. Air traffic is a huge source of greenhouse pollution, increasing that traffic exponentially in order to scatter tons of heat-trapping metallic particles. And heat-liberating barium salts have undoubtedly led to accelerated global warming. Greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, including carbon dioxide, have reached a record high this year. And this, again, this is 7 years ago. As carbon dioxide levels rise, oxygen levels decrease. In 1996, scientists for global responsibility compiled a report contending that dangerous geoengineering, as proposed by both Teller and the Global Change Research Coordination Office, would be absolutely ineffective in mitigating global warming. The report noted that climate engineering research is funded by industry with a vested interest in continued high consumption of fossil fuels. The harebrained scheme of particle engineering was contrived to ensure that industry polluters will never be forced to decrease their greenhouse gas emissions. But because warming and pollution trends have worsened drastically since the aerosol projects began, we must suspect that the warming mitigation program is a hoax and that chemtrailing is really intended, among other things, to create a series of hobgoblins. The establishment's modus operandi for maintaining a fierce and lucrative hold on the collective American mind has been defined precisely by the satirist H.L. Mencken, who wrote, quote, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and thus clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary." And, you know, that you can link together with Ben Franklin's, anyone who's willing to give up a little bit of their freedom for a little of their security deserve neither. And that is what politics is all about. Constant fear. Again, I say you've got to walk that fine line of just, you know, keeping informed and being alert, but still living your life. You can't consume this stuff 24/7. It'll drive you crazy. That's what they want. They want you to be scared. And when they come on the news and say, March 11th, 2020 is a day we'll live in infamy. Everybody needs to stay in their house and wait for us to create a vaccine. And just please, Pfizer, please hurry up and make it for us. That's what they want. Continues. And the report from the Iron Mountain, published in 1967, just as the Pentagon's lucrative Vietnam War was being revved into high gear, establishment brain trusters confirmed that a perpetual war is absolutely vital for controlling and manipulating the masses. And look, guys, let's talk about war itself. World War I, right, was in the 1910s. 1914, 1917, 18-ish, wasn't much longer. World War II, 41 to 45. Korea, right after that in the 50s. Vietnam, the 60s and 70s. 80, the war on drugs. How did that work out? for the inner city communities. 90s was Desert Storm, Bosnia, 9/11, Iraq, Afghanistan, and here we are, full circle, back to Russia, Ukraine, a pending World War III. I still think Israel will be a player before it's all said and done with Iran, because they follow the morals and dogma by Albert Pike. Albert Pike said it would be, the Middle East would be involved, and they got the guy in place in Israel, Netanyahu, the warmonger there. And there was a report that came out the other day that said something to the effect that Iran's uranium was enriched 86%, and they're on the verge of being able to create. So you will see in the next days, weeks, and months, a big sabotage event by Israel. And will that be the one that kicks things off? We'll see. Anyway, let's get back into this. The document even suggested a number of options for creating fictitious enemies, noting that perpetual war induces populations to give blind allegiance to political authority. Since the 1930s, when the Eastern establishment, including the Bush family, we're looking at you, Prescott, looking down at you, I should say, used its New York banks and oil companies to secretly fund Hitler's German party. Our controllers have employed fear, the concept of enemy. We've always, since I've been born, we've had an enemy. In the 70s, it was Iran, right? Everybody had their Mickey Mouse t-shirts with Mickey sticking his middle finger up saying, "Hey, Iran," right? They were the bad guys. And then it was Russia, the Cold War. We were in boot camp 1987 talking about killing commies. The targets we had were Russian, the little green guys. I forget what they called them, and I'm sure there's vests right now. But they're little commie guys that would pop up, the pop-up targets, right? And then in 1990, it all changed. Our enemy was no longer... wasn't it convenient? Right? The dissolution of the USSR started 1988, and it was, you know, officially over 91, but it really started, I think, in 89 when the big speech was given, right, by Bush. And it's just so convenient that, you know, 1989 was basically the Cold War came to an end. And just in less than a year, we had a new enemy with Saddam Hussein. We always have an enemy. When in your lifetime has there been peace? You know, 80s, there was the constant threat. You know, all while it was mostly peaceful, we had Panama and the Falkland Islands and Nicaragua and the Beirut bombing and those type of things. We've always had enemies. And that is their way of employing fear. The concept of enemy and war is to keep us in bondage. Chemtrailing is a manifestation of the Fourth Reich, an era of corporate fascism ushered in by a powerful military juggernaut which manufactures enemies and unleashes fake terror attacks to scare us into voiceless submission. Now, you got to be careful with the wording here, because fake terror attacks is, I wouldn't have used that words. These are terror attacks that are not, you know, there's always a patsy involved, whether it's Lee Harvey Oswald or, you know, the guy from the Oklahoma City bombings, Timothy McVeigh. There's always a bad guy. Osama bin Laden, within a couple of hours of the largest crime scene in American history, it was Osama bin Laden. We always have an enemy. Always. But the thing is, you can't say fake terror attacks to scare us into voiceless submission, because people die. People died in Oklahoma City. Terrence Yakey was murdered for trying to tell the truth. And that's, you know, these are the people why I continue to do this podcast for. And I will continue to do so until they take it down, which they will someday, and that's fine. And then I'll go dust off the ham radio and I'll find a frequency and start broadcasting like that. I don't care. I got a megaphone. We can go downtown and start, you know, beating the streets again. We all know the real enemy is in Washington, D.C. They're behind most of the evil that goes on around this world. We are the ones with military bases all around the world. And we are the ones that have continued to overthrow governments and brought misery to so many countries and people around the world. And, you know, I thought about this a lot today. We spent a couple hours doing some chicken maintenance, cleaning the coops, doing a little maintenance around here. We're planting some seeds inside with the grow lights. You know, at some point, we as citizens of the United States, we have to take accountability, because what are we doing to stop it? So many of us go to bed every night without a care in the world. And there's a lot of people who go to sleep around the world, and their lives have been changed forever because of us. And it's a bitter pill to swallow. And for a long time, I've been pointing the finger at our government. But it's really on us to hold them accountable. We still go about our day. People still pay their taxes and enable these monsters to do what they do. You know, our fellow citizens in Ohio are struggling. Meanwhile, our government is handing checks for hundreds of millions of dollars to, again, Ukraine is the most corrupt country in all of that side of the world. It's not even close. Has been for a long, long time. So at some point, it's up to us, the citizens of the United States, to say enough. Enough, we have to. So, you know, the government, yeah, but we're enablers. We allow them to get away with it. And I know that's a bitter pill to swallow, and a lot of people don't agree with me, but what are we doing about it? Again, since the 1930s, almost 100 years, when the Eastern establishment, including the Prescott Bush family and its New York bankers and oil companies, secretly funded Hitler's German party, our controllers have employed fear and the concept of enemy and war to keep us in bondage. Chemtrailing is a manifestation of the Fourth Reich, an era of corporate fascism ushered in by a powerful military juggernaut, which scares us into a voiceless submission. Both Saddam Hussein and the Al-Qaeda networks have long been nourished and funded by the CIA, right? They've been groomed by the U.S. military and corporate advisors to play the role as enemies. We gave Saddam Hussein money and weapons for 8 years, from 1980 to 1988. Then all of a sudden, he was a bad guy. You can't make this stuff up. And the American citizens got right on board. And they paid a young lady, a 14-year-old girl, $12 million. They paid $12 million to train Naira al-Sabah to lie to the Senate committee, talking about Iraqis were pulling the babies, throwing them on the ground. Former German technology minister Andreas von Bülow recently confirmed on U.S. radio that hijacked planes were able to fly around the eastern U.S. on 9/11 unimpeded by military interdiction, because those attacks were part of a carefully orchestrated covert operation designed to coerce America into perpetual conflict with the Muslim world. You don't say, because we bow to Israel. And who is Israel's enemy? The Muslim world. Now, a secret Pentagon report has been conveniently leaked to the media. It condemns that abrupt climate change is the newest hobgoblin. Authored by change agents with ties to the, you guessed it, CIA and the Royal Dutch Shell Group, the report contends that abrupt climate change will lead to a global catastrophe of monumental proportions, right? And, you know, they had their boy Bill Gates parading this stuff around too. And it talks about how nations will disappear beneath the encroaching sea, and survivors will fight for dwindling food and water and energy supplies. Fear, fear, fear. Yet the Pentagon has been involved for decades in the drastic manipulation of weather, climate, and atmospheric conditions. The United States used a chemical agent dubbed olive oil during Operation Popeye, again, to induce heavy rains in Vietnam. And this is back in the 60s. The Air Force document titled Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025, and here we are in 2023, guys, lists its weaponized agenda for creating abrupt climate change, including storm creation and modification, fog and cloud creation, precipitation enhancement, precipitation denial, drought inducement, and artificial creation of space weather. This document also states that the military's radical weather modification agenda will become part of a national security policy with both domestic and international applications. Weather weapons are now routinely used in war zones. A citizen reporting from Serbia noted that during NATO operations in the Balkans, black clouds would suddenly materialize out of the blue skies. Hailstones were the size of eggs, and surreal thunder and lightning terrified the people. He reported that scientists found that electromagnetic field over Serbia had been punctured, causing rain systems to circumvent the region. In addition to manufactured drought, scientists also predict that Serbia will suffer 10,000 cancer deaths from the depleted uranium used there. According to the University of Ottawa professor Michael Chasudovsky, the military's HARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, operating in Alaska. By the way, a lot of people say now that Alaska is just not even the real one. It's there to throw people off in case somebody wants to go crazy and try to take it out. That's just really a decoy. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. That's just a lot of what's going on right now. Operating in Alaska as part of the Strategic Defense Initiative is a powerful tool for weather and climate modification. Operated jointly by the Navy and Air Force, HARP antennas bombard and heat the ionosphere, causing electromagnetic frequencies to bounce back to Earth, penetrating everything, both living and dead. HARP transmissions make holes in the ozones, creating yet another hobgoblin. HARP inventor Bernard Eastland described in his original patent how antenna energy can interact with plumes of atmospheric particles used as a lens or focusing device to modify the weather. HARP is capable of triggering floods, droughts, hurricanes, much to the chagrin of both the European Parliament and the Russian Duma. HARP also generates sweeping pulses through the UELF and EELF range. In 2000, independent researchers monitored HARP transmissions of 14 hertz. What they found was when these signals were broadcast at high output levels, wind speeds topped 70 miles per hour. They watched as these same transmissions dispersed a huge weather front approaching the West Coast from California to British Columbia. Although precipitation had been originally forecast, the front was seen shredding apart on satellite photos, and the rain didn't materialize. The hobgoblin drought can be an enriching and empowering tool for certain corporate and governing entities. Despite the visual evidence that every aspect of our physical environment is being manipulated and damaged for war games, some Americans cannot accept that dangerous covert operations are being conducted by a government they still to this day somehow believe to be a virtuous defender of freedom. Their stumbling block? It's a numbing belief that their own officials would never perpetrate dangerous experimentation on humanity since, well, they have families too. History and the release of declassified government documents disprove such naivety. Although they had families too, the U.S. government and its defense contractors exposed citizens of the Northwest to huge and deliberate releases of radioactive iodine from the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, where plutonium was produced for nuclear bombs. Those Cold War releases unleashed radiation illnesses upon thousands of downwinders, some of whom received up to 350 rads of radiation, when a maximum safety dose is set at 0.025. Between 1949 and 1952, radioactive pellets, dust, and particles were tested upon the hapless citizens of Utah and New Mexico. You know, we're told that defense officials perpetrate these atrocities so scientists could learn how to protect Americans from an attack. So why in the late 80s would our protectors fall all over themselves to supply Saddam Hussein's war machine with over 90 shipments of chemical and biological weaponry, including sarin gas, anthrax, botulism, Brucella, and the West Nile virus? It will likely be years before Americans are told what this is, it will likely be years before what Americans are told what is being tested upon during our present chemtrail era. The Hanford downwinders did not learn until 1986 what had been unleashed on them some 30 years earlier. And of course, we talk about Operation Sea Spray in San Francisco. They've been testing the American population for a long, long time. MK Ultra, so on and so forth. Shad victims filed a suit in 2003 to learn the extent which they were intentionally supposed to dangerous substance in the 1960s. Again, everything comes full circle, and we always talk about when we discuss podcasts, how many other rabbit holes. We've already talked about Bush. We've talked about 9/11. And now Operation Paperclip has entered the matrix to understand how our nation has arrived at this doomsday corruption. We must recall that immediately after World War II ended, the United States government initiated Operation Paperclip, through which a large number of German scientists were imported to the United States. They were issued new identities, and these death industry professionals were employed in the United States military laboratories to develop a dazzling array of secret weapons projects. Again, Germany didn't lose the war. They just moved to America. With congressional funding, the crowning achievement of this nexus was the creation of ghastly new bioweapons, including the AIDS virus and an incapacitating chronic fatigue agent engineered from mycoplasma and Brucella. America's 70,000 nuclear weapons manufactured since 1945 are not sufficient. As the Department of Energy gears up to develop and test fourth-gen nukes, numerous reports continue to surface about the agency's sordid corruption and mismanagement, their habitual cover-up of site contamination, and its devious efforts to downplay serious illnesses suffered by many of its nuclear workers are among many of the scandals. Of course, the Pentagon's nuke era was in the capable hands of good old Donald Rumsfeld, who didn't know what Building 7 was, who has ably presided over the preemptive nuclear incineration of the Middle Eastern Muslims. Rumsfeld has never adequately explained why his department was unable to defend the Pentagon building despite a full hour's notice that hijacked airplanes were in the air. Should Rumsfeld be replaced due to the Pentagon's Iraqi torture scandal, we are all assured his Bush-appointed successor will share his have nuke will travel ideology. Of course, this was written when Rumsfeld was still alive. Now that we've tied together the historical and political realities for which we are mindlessly wave our flags, we still hope that sufficient number of American lab rats will miraculously awaken from their collective stupor and take stock of our appalling situation. After all, rodents have a notoriously short lifespan and are always killed when no longer useful to those conducting the research. That is quite the powerful line there, is it not? The irony of this horror story is that we the rats are being plundered to finance our own demise. Our national debt, 32, you know, when they wrote the story in 2015, our national debt was $7.2 trillion. It is now $32.5 trillion. The Pentagon, of course, back in 2003, could not account for $2.3 trillion of its own shadowy transactions. The radioactive operations in Iraq were costing $3.7 billion a month. Those in Afghanistan, $900 million a month. No one knows how many billions are being flushed into Operation Cloverleaf and all the other hobgoblin projects. Listen to this number. The United States spends $11,000 per second on weapons, according to the calculations of celebrated author William Thomas. So while we await the Great Awakening, have a wonderful spring under a synthetic tarpaulin of aluminum white and particle-laden, electrically charged aviation scum that passes for sky, endure well your respiratory and ocular difficulties while staring at huge oily sun rings and smeary sun dogs, that patent signature of chemical assault. Don't forget to salute and click your heels when you see tanker formations patriotically saturating the atmosphere with such a dense microparticulate brew that they cast black shadows alongside or ahead of themselves. As you witness the noxious drama in the skies, remember, it is all just part of the kill chain. And, yeah, those chemtrails, you see them all the time. We see the crazy weather. We see the earthquakes. And the great question is, how much of it is it controlled and what is organic anymore? The weather here has been unlike anything I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's very worrisome. So I guess that's a wrap for today, guys. Happy Wednesday. Always bringing the good news here on the Fact Hunter podcast. But again, ignoring things doesn't fix it. We have so many problems right now. Our national debt, the debt to China, the way our government ignores its veterans and the people like the good folks of East Palestine, Ohio, on and on and on. America last, and we continue to nurture it, right? We continue to enable it, I guess is the proper word. Not intentionally, but I guess from that lack thereof action, holding up our end of the bargain. But we've seen some people, some good people try to do so, and every single time they're infiltrated and sent away to the gulags. I think there's still, 900 people sitting in the prison in the D.C. area, or in federal prisons, I should say, either awaiting trials or already sentenced for the organized events of January 6th. We'll see how much, I guess, Tucker Carlson got 40-some thousand hours of tapes. We'll see what comes out of it, if anything. If anything comes out of it, I'm sure they'll distract us with something because that's what they do. Squirrel, right? And you turn and look, there's something else. A balloon. Oh, look, a balloon. Shoot it down. We didn't shoot it down. How long did that occupy? But seriously, a balloon is one way, going back to the beginning of the program, is one of the ways it could certainly deliver an EMP. So please do take the time to check out the show description if you want to listen to that video, if you want to order that book. There's a couple links to the Amazon items there if you so want to indulge yourself to have a little backup. If not, no worries. I just wanted to put that out there for you. Don't forget, tomorrow night I'll be interviewing Bart Sobrell. And then Thursday night we will have a live show at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the return of William Boot. And I'll be back for a brief podcast on Friday. Talk a little bit about Mr. Ted Kaczynski. And again, what he saw coming with the social credit scores and how technology would really control our lives. And here we are. The elections, the way social media, I mean, he called it. He really did. And we'll touch on that on Friday. We'll maybe see if I can find some classic audio talking about Mr. Theodore John Kaczynski. And then Sunday night, we will have, as always, our classic audio. I hope everybody has a good week. Enjoy yourself. Spend time with your family. Do what you love. But as always, keep your head on a swivel and be aware of your surroundings. Make sure you have a little bit of extras around just in case. God bless each and every one of you. It's thefacthunter@mail.com, thefacthunter@mail.com. And don't forget, Thursday night, 8 p.m., join us on the website, thefacthunter.com, for a live program. Until then, again, keep your head on a swivel, and we will see you.
Listening to the Fact Hunter Radio Network.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.